So welcome here. We've got an amazing source for this week. If you're new to Turning Towards Life, you might be listening on a podcast, or you might be listening live on Facebook, or you might be catching up on Facebook or watching YouTube. We have a way of seeing and reading the source, both on our Facebook page, but also on turningtowards.life. You can find all the sources and all of the recordings of this as well. If you want to listen back to other episodes, or you want to find the actual poem or the actual piece of writing that Justin and I talk about. So we feel quite sophisticated in all of that, by the way. We don't say that lightly. Justin does an amazing amount of work to get that all live and share it with the world. So this is, I think, week 92, Justin?
I think it's more than that, Lizzie. It might even be 94.
94 or something. So it's very miraculous to have got this far. And actually, Justin, this morning I was reflecting on where this got born. And for some reason, it's completely sticks in my mind. We were on the train back from Suffolk, which, if you don't know, is a very beautiful area of the UK, where our dear friend Nina lives, who also is in part of Third Space. And we were sitting opposite each other on one of those table sections in the train. And we had an amazing conversation about, I don't even know what the conversation was about, but I remember the moment when we said, my goodness, this needs not just to be for us. This needs to be wider than this. This needs to be something that we get to share with the world when we have these very beautiful, to me, very moving conversations about things, and particularly about when we're talking about something, like a source, that we call it a source. And so that's how it got born. I was brushing my teeth this morning thinking, oh, that's cool. That's the moment that I remember so clearly. Like, there are certain moments in my life that I remember as kind of clear, present, and I kind of capture them, I think, in an image or something. And I can see us both on the train, either side of the table, thinking it was a good idea to try and do something. And we didn't know it would be this. And then it turned into this. And it's a very lovely thing that we're still doing it nearly. Well, it would be 2 years in the autumn or something, won't it?
That's right.
Mm. I don't know, but I've done lots of things for 2 years, but I've never done something like this for 2 years. Like, it's quite miraculous, really. So it's a very wonderful thing. And obviously we have, Justin, you were saying the other day that we have a bank of about a week's worth of listening. So if you kind of went on holiday and had literally nothing to do, you might be able to listen to us for an entire week worth of speaking and reading. So we've built quite a bank. So please, if you're new to this, and maybe you've just been here a little while or something, please feel free to go and benefit from, listen, share any of the sources. Justin does this wonderful thing where he puts a little title that kind of summarizes things, and there's a little summary of what what we end up speaking about as well. So you can filter that according to where you're at in your life, or a theme that's coming up, or if you might have a friend who's particularly reflecting on something or struggling with something. And you can really look at those titles and the descriptions that allow you to kind of forward something to someone. So please go and do that if it would be helpful to you. We're very delighted that we get to share in this very liberal way. And it means a lot to us when more people get to hear the conversations and join our community, really. And I was thinking of why on earth we're doing this as well this morning. And I think for both of us, Justin, community is such an important thing, to be with one another in conversation and in a deeper kind of relationship that we normally find in the world about really important topics that mean something to us. And that we get to maybe extend that through Turning Towards Life to other people is very meaningful. So please take advantage of the intention and send things around and be generous. One other thing to say before we begin with this lovely, amazing poem that Justin's brought for this week is that Justin will be teaching the foundations of coaching, which is one of our signature programs in Third Space Coaching. And that will be on the 23rd and 24th of September in Hammersmith. It's a very wonderful 2 days of learning about the way that we work with people, but also ourselves. And those two things, turns out, are not disconnected from one another. So it's a 2-day program with Justin about really the underpinnings and the philosophy and the experience of what it's like to work with people using something called the integral coaching way. Well, that's not what it's called, but I'm just calling that now. It's called integral development coaching, but it's a way of being with people that is very beautiful. And I would really recommend, if you feel called in any way to working with people, or maybe you already do work with people in a therapeutic or a coaching kind of way, this could be a very lovely compliment. And it's also possible to just begin with this as well. So that will be with Justin in Hammersmith on the 23rd and 24th of September, if you fancy joining in. And meanwhile, we're going to begin with this gorgeous, inspiring, life-giving source. Justin, do you want to say a little bit about this before we begin?
I'm going to say only one thing. I'm going to make a thanks to Cheryl, who brought this to us. It's always quite fabulous when powerful sources come into our orbit. Actually, I'm going to say two things. So that was the one thing. The second thing was just to reflect on something you just said, Lizzie, about the origins of this project. One of the things that has me feeling very hopeful is that we live in a time where it's possible to reach far out into the world. This technology that we're using, Zoom and Facebook and podcasting and all of that, is a way in which it's possible for people to connect with one another and to speak to one another and to bring things which are inspiring and truthful and opening and have us be in contact with what really matters. It's also a time where it's possible to spread superficialities, to spread things that are take us away from ourselves or entrench our judgments of ourselves or others or our fear or all those kind of things, but both possible at the same time. And I'm very grateful that we can do this, actually, that we can, in a very simple way on a Sunday morning, begin something that reaches a really long way.
Yeah.
So thank you to all of you who are joining us. And I have a small request in that regard before we reach the source. If you do listen to us on a podcasting platform like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, whatever it is, Spotify as well, if you feel so moved and you rate the podcast, they have different systems on each, but if you think it's good and you rate it well, it really helps it spread, because then people can find us. That's the way that these things work. Only do it if you think that's what you think, but you can help us out in bringing this work to a wider audience that way.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read this source. As always, you'll be able to find it after our live broadcast on turningtowards.life. It's called Waiting. It's by Laser Lovitz. And if you're a member of our Facebook group, you can also join our Facebook group, search for Turning Towards Life. And you can be with us live, as many people are now, and you can also read it there. So this is Waiting. You keep waiting for something to happen. The thing that lifts you out of yourself catapults you into doing all the things you've put off, the great things you're meant to do in your life, but somehow never quite get to. You keep waiting for the planets to shift, the new moon to bring news, the universe to align, something to give. Meanwhile, the pile of papers, the laundry, the dishes, the job, it all stacks up, while you keep hoping for some miracle to blast down upon you, scattering the piles to the winds. Sometimes you lie in bed, terrified of your life. Sometimes you laugh at the privilege of waking, but all the while, life goes on in its messy way. And then you turn 40 or 50 or 60. And some part of you realizes you are not alone. And you find signs of this in the animal kingdom. When a snake sheds its skin, its eyes glaze over, it slinks under a rock, not wanting to be touched. And when caterpillar turns to butterfly, if the pupa is brushed, it will die. And when the bird taps its beak hungrily against the egg, it's because the thing is too small, and it needs to break out. And midlife walks you into that wisdom, that this is what transformation looks like. The mess of it, the tapping at the walls of your life, the yearning and writhing and pushing, until one day you emerge from the wreck, embracing both the immense dawn and the dusk of the body, glistening beautiful just as you are.
I'm going to read this again. And as you're listening, maybe all of us could take a deeper breath than normal and just see what it is to just let this in a little bit more in the second reading, this beautiful transition that's being spoken of. You keep waiting for something to happen, the thing that lifts you out of yourself, catapults you into doing all the things you've put off, the great things you're meant to do in your life, but somehow never quite get to. You keep waiting for the planets to shift, a new moon to bring news, the universe to align, something to give. Meanwhile, the pile of papers, the laundry, the dishes, the job, it all stacks up while you keep hoping for some miracle to blast down upon you, scattering the piles to the winds. Sometimes you lie in bed terrified of your life. Sometimes you laugh at the privilege of waking, but all the while life goes on in its messy way. And then you turn 40, or 50, or 60, and some part of you realizes you are not alone. And you find signs of this in the animal kingdom. When a snake sheds its skin, its eyes glaze over, it slinks under a rock, not wanting to be touched. And when caterpillar turns to butterfly, if the pupa is brushed, it will die. And when the bird taps its beak hungrily against the egg, it's because the thing is too small, and it needs to break out. And midlife walks you into that wisdom, that this is what transformation looks like. The mess of it, the tapping at the walls of your life, the yearning and writhing and pushing. Until one day you emerge from the wreck, embracing both the immense dawn and the dusk of the body, glistening, beautiful, just as you are.
God, such extraordinary words. There's so much that moves me about this poem, and it's very deeply moving, Lizzie, hearing you read it. And I've said this a number of times on the podcast. I'm very aware that 50 is what's coming soon for me. And it says here 40 or 50 or 60, it doesn't matter if it's 70 or 80 or, you know. And it's strange how we attach significance to these years that are multiples of the number of digits that we have in our hands. So that's very present for me as we read this. But the thing that moves me so much is the recognition of the mess of it. This way that we imagine that there's some we long for so easily some kind of transformation of ourselves that we can imagine that somehow we'll set everything right. You know, then I'll have done everything that I'm meant to do, and now my life will make sense, and somehow this is going to happen, and I'll hold on, and everything is contingent. I've certainly felt like this many times and for long periods of time. My life is not right. Something is terribly wrong, and it will be set right, and then somehow it will be ordered and comprehensible and everything. And I so love the invitation of this poem is no, it's not going to be like that. Probably there may well be giant transformations on the way, just like the snake and the butterfly and the egg, but frankly they'll be messy as hell and involve a great big load of struggle. This line, yearning and writhing and pushing, and what we emerge from is the wreck. But this is tear, it brings tears to me to read these lines. You emerge from the wreck, embracing both the immense dawn and the dusk of the body, glistening and beautiful just as you are. The possibility that we might know ourselves much more like what we see around ourselves in the natural world than something else, some kind of misunderstanding that we have that we're meant to be, I don't know what, godlike or machine-like, or I don't know what the alternatives are. So I can feel as we read this, a huge amount of allowing for the realness of things, less clouded, not less clouded by my yearnings and longings, but less clouded by an idea that I might have that things will be a particular way. Oh, and that I'll be in charge of them. I think that's the other thing. Somehow, they'll be my way. Yeah. It's very freeing and very kind, I think.
Yeah. And that also, for me, just listening to that, Justin, serves to, I don't know, somehow soothes this feeling of waiting that this poem invites me to reflect on, like the feeling that something is going to come along. And I think it kind of goes back to the deeply embedded romantic notions that we have of being saved or chosen or special, all those things. And somehow for me, the antidote to that is this, as you say, the invitation to it, allowing the realness and the messiness and accepting that that's what the nature of life is, that we're essentially winging it. And it's like we're either winging it reluctantly or we're winging it willingly. And I feel like to wing it willingly brings me great joy, because I can go, well, I'm winging it anyway, so I may as well just be okay with that rather than feel bad about that or like ashamed of the fact that I'm winging it. And this kind of pressure that arrives, because in the narrative of waiting, I might not have to sort out the pile of papers because I'm going to be, something's going to happen. And it would mean I wouldn't have to sort out the papers, the pile that's building, because then that would go away then. So there's a kind of, in the story of waiting, in the story of waiting for the thing that comes down and gets us, takes us away, takes something away that we find hard, maybe many things we'd like it to take away. In the narrative of that, I'm kind of not fully engaged in my life. And there's a kind of removal that I experience in this dynamic of the waiting. And then as this poem goes on and acknowledges all the parts of me that, you know, the laundry, the dishes, the job, the papers, the stuff of life. And then acknowledges the part of me that has wisdom simultaneously right there. It just feels like a joyful kind of freedom comes over me. And it's necessary to have this contrast too, is what I feel. So the beginning of the poem and the end, each end is beautiful because of the other end. And so that kind of mess, because there's always different things going on in me anyway. And so that validation of the mess and the juxtaposition of things that don't go together feels like just an acknowledgement of that in the way that the poem unfolds as well, feels relieving and relaxing and welcoming, and like human becomes possible in all of the ridiculousness of life. And the pressure feels like it's taken off by this poem. So how Lisa Lovitz did this is just very beautiful to me.
I'm so glad for the way that you said this, that we're all winging it. And that we can wing it reluctantly or willingly. And that seems so true. And the split that we get into with ourselves in a way starts with, are not are not owning up to winging it. Because if actually life, if we see that life is one great big improvisation in circumstances that are largely unknowable, we know lots of things, but there's much more that we don't know and that we can't know. And I'm speaking out of, you know, my own doing this very often. I think I'm meant to have this together. I'm meant to know what I'm doing. If I don't really know what I'm doing, at least I can look like I know what I'm doing. And then I won't be the only one who doesn't know what I'm doing. And I think that the biggest gift is knowing that we're all making it up. That's the thing. Because without that, then let me see if I can follow this thought through. If I'm the only one who's not winging it, if everybody else is not winging it and I'm the only one who's having to wing it, then I better hold on very tight, pretend I'm together, and really, really hope that something rescues me from this disaster that I'm in the middle of. And it is so liberating to realize that it doesn't matter whether you're a judge or a celebrity, you know, a doctor or a person taking care of a family, as someone who's scrabbling to make ends meet, someone trying to figure out what to do with the millions in your bank account, or, you know, whatever it is, whatever kind of life circumstances we find ourselves in those regards, that we are still in the middle of the most giant mystery.
Yeah.
And as you were talking about all of this, the lines that really... I love this thing you said about the structure of this poem, is it's kind of symmetrical, really. Actually, I think if we probably sat down and really looked, we'd see that the front and the back, front and the end sort of match one another in these ways. But the two pairs of lines are kind of mirrors to one another. One is, sometimes you lie in bed terrified of your life, and sometimes you laugh at the privilege of waking. And I read those lines with such a relief, because they're both true.
Okay.
Absolutely. Sometimes I lie in bed terrified of my life. And very often I lie in bed longer feeling terrified of my life, when I imagine that lying in bed feeling terrified of my life is not an okay thing to do, and I have to stop it and I have to get rid of it. And then actually it's like being in a vice or something, it constricts.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I surprise myself, often when I let go and I laugh, and I think, my goodness, how amazing it is to be here and to be alive. Gorgeous thing. So that caught me. And then the other side of it that caught me whilst you were talking was this thing that I'm getting very curious about, where she says, you know, when a snake sheds its skin, when a caterpillar turns to butterfly, the snake slinks under a rock and it doesn't want to be touched. And in fact, if the pupa is brushed of the butterfly, it will die. There's this point where we find ourselves like exquisitely sensitive. And I think that the mistake, I've been feeling like that a lot recently, and I think that maybe the mistake that we make is in line with what you were saying about not owning up to the mess of it, is we are also the kind of beings that feel a ton. It's what it is to be a human being, and we often pretend that we're not, maybe for the sake of being people who have it all together and who know what we're doing. We pretend that this doesn't hurt, and we pretend that I'm not like super raw. We kind of cover all of that up, and in a way it probably doesn't, it neither accelerates nor stops whatever's coming anyway, but our denial of it, boy, does it make it so much harder to be in our lives than it needs to be.
Yeah. And you know, the for me, the theme here with the bit that you're talking about in the animal kingdom is around transition. And this is the bit that I think culturally we really do not know how to be with in our world. So many times when people are in transition of some kind, it triggers all of our panic. And we do all kinds of things to kind of keep it contained or quieten it down or push it away or cover it up or whatever we're doing, with tactics of shaming or sometimes with drugs or food or whatever it is, so that it kind of keeps that thing going. cake under the rock thing going, rather than relating me to it in the kind of way that, oh yeah, snakes go under rocks for a while. Let's be patient. Let's do what's needed. Let's take care of the environment so the person can be under the rock for a while and emerge when the transition is ripe to be emergent. And so I feel like to acknowledge this and to be clear and clean with ourselves about this is also a way to allow the transitions and the change in our inner worlds, in our outer worlds, in other people's outer worlds that we're in relationship with. But know that this is what life is, that life is in the field of winging it. Like it's the energy of, this isn't a clear-cut path. This is mysterious, as you're saying, that's the nature of life. And so to be able to embrace that and be with it in our bodies, in our hearts and our minds, and find ways of feeling and thinking and relating in our bodies to these happenings in our lives and in others' lives, feels like it allows life to unfold in the way that it wants, rather than our small ideas of interfering in it and getting in the way of it happening. And the bit that really struck me when you were talking as well, Justin, was it's one of these ones that I find hard to formulate, but I want to say it. It's like, when I'm in denial about the fact that I'm winging it, and or feeling particularly conscious of the fact that I'm winging it and feeling bad about it, the more I will demand you or anyone else to not be winging it, because I need you not to be winging it so that I can not feel so worried about the fact that I really, really am winging it. So when I'm reluctantly winging it, I become much more demanding for you to be fine and then the world to be fine, because I'm really reluctant about the fact that I do not have myself together and this is not nailed down and I'm not okay. And it just got me really curious as you were speaking as to the demands that we can have on others in our systems that mean we shame them for not being perfect or not being what we need them to be, or we attack them for it. But it's really, in some ways, resolvable by the acceptance that we're all winging it. Like, it feels like a gift to myself to know that, but it feels like a gift to the people around me to know and feel that, so that I'm not asking something of them that's not possible because of what the nature of life is.
We got talking about this last week, Lizzie, when we were talking about trees. And I'm sure you'll remember that we talked about the difficulty when we start to see ourselves as things, and the liberation, the freedom that comes when we start to see ourselves as a process, see human beings as a process. And I think that what you're talking about is in that order, actually, which is, and I agree with you, I certainly experienced this myself, and I've experienced this from other people around us, that when we are, one way of talking about when you talk about winging it is this way in which we're in the mess of life and we don't have it together. And we, in a way, there's a way that we can't, because life is so vast and so mysterious and all of that. And the other part of it that I'm thinking of is that you were talking about is with those particular times when we find ourselves in the midst of a deeply unknowable change that's coming upon us. I keep on imagining if a caterpillar could speak, what a caterpillar would say when this starts to happen. Oh my goodness, what on earth is this? And it's, perhaps it's particularly at those times that are in our wish to not acknowledge how messy it is and how unsure it is, that we try to make ourselves and other people into things. And we essentially are saying, don't be a living something, be fixed so I can rely on you. I can't deal with the fact that I'm changing in a way that I don't understand, or that you're changing. And we try to get people back into a knowable shape, and we say things like, well, that's not like you, something must be wrong. And maybe we do it out of a sort of great kindness, in a way, an intent to be kind, but it ends up being very unwittingly very cruel. It's like, so it's, as I'm understanding the poem in a new way, it's like going and touching the pupa, brushing the pupa right at its most sensitive point when something that really matters is happening. And we don't often know, but we could know if we looked at our lives, we don't often know how to be alongside that change as it breaks out. And so we pile on so much difficulty onto ourselves and other people by trying to don't become this, don't become this, don't have this happen, this shouldn't be happening, and it shouldn't be happening to me. Which is why the invitation in the poem here is the possibility that sometime we might realize that we're not alone when we look at the animal kingdom, that this crazy, unknowable ever-changingness of us, which keeps on throwing us again and again and again into the deep not knowing, and also the not knowing ourselves, we turn out to be different to how we'd imagined. Our mistake is that we haven't recognized it yet, that it's everywhere. It's just everywhere, all around us. And instead of being having it together, what it turns out that our lives are in many ways yearning and writhing and pushing until one day we emerge from the wreck, embracing both the immense dawn and the body glistening and beautiful just as we are. And maybe the tragedy is that we don't really have ways of talking about that in our culture. It's somehow been put to the margins and made invisible.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the things that we're doing, well, certainly that Lazar Lovitz is doing by writing this poem, is bringing it back to us. It's restoring to us that this is something so important to know about the being of a human being.
It's so important.
Mm.
I'm so grateful to be acknowledged in all the times of transition. And in a way, it's like this poem feels like another branch to hang on to when, you know, when in the moments in your life where you, it's like I felt so at sea, and this realization of not being alone happens in this poem as well. You know, maybe in one of those days when you're terrified lying in bed, or everything feels like the ground is shifting in the ways that you can't even articulate, or something ends, or there's something beginning, or someone dies, or someone gets ill, or I get ill. It just feels like a ray of hope that if I could have this poem in my life, which I now do, there's a place to come that acknowledges that and realizes that it's okay to be here. And that's very welcome and important. And when we are at sea, when we don't know what to do, that this has gone into our consciousness somehow through reading this poem and talking about it, is a kind of anchor into a letting myself go through it without adding a layer on top that I shouldn't be going through it, which makes the whole thing way worse than it actually is in my experience. Like the fact that I shouldn't be lying in bed, or I shouldn't be doing this, I shouldn't be doing that, instead of embracing it and letting it come and having faith that I'm not going to be completely taken out by this one. I'm not gonna implode, or this is going to be, I mean, it is it in some ways, like I am, something is normally dying in those times too, like something's being born and something's dying. But that I'm not going to be obliterated or something. That I'm not going to be smashed to smithereens beyond a point that's survivable, which often is how these transitions feel to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel very grateful for this.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a reminder also, I think, of why conversations like this are so important. So I really appreciate the conversation, Lizzie, between you and me, where we get to talk about this. And then I am very glad for those that we have around us who we can talk about this with too, and all of you who are joining us here, listening or watching. I hope that this can be one way in which we can bring into our shared conversation some truthfulness about what it is to be human, so we can stop pretending so much and start to settle into the kindness and gracefulness that comes from knowing our lives as they are. So we've said this so many times, I'm very glad that we do this, even if no one else was listening and watching. We know that people do, that you do listen and watch, so thank you for being with us.
Yeah.
And we're going to close about here. We will be back, all being well, next week. You can catch up with everything we've done on turningtowards.life or on our podcast. You can join our Facebook group. You can come and learn with us in September. You can check out wearethirdspace.org, where you can find out about all of that. And we are very glad for all of you who make doing this something more than a Sunday morning chat between the two of us. And we'll see you soon.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.